Welcome to the Magnolia Media Podcast, part of the Magnolia Media Network. I'm your host, Jonathan M. Ruggiero.
And I am your co-host, Courtney.
All right, Miss Courtney, we start today off with the White House Correspondents' Dinner, which was Saturday night. It will be televised on Sunday night, if you have CNN. It was actually quite entertaining. The host was Colin Jost of Saturday Night Live. President Biden roasted Trump and made fun of himself, of course. Most of Biden's self-deprecating comments were about his age, obviously. But he had quite a few good ones for Donald Trump, who is falling asleep, farting himself to sleep, to quote Colin Jost exactly, in his New York criminal trial. So Donald Trump can fart himself to sleep during a criminal trial, but somehow Joe Biden is sleepy, which doesn't make a lot of sense. Meanwhile, on Capitol Hill, CNN and others have reported on Marjorie Taylor Greene's most recent humiliation. Marjorie Taylor Greene's push to remove Speaker MAGA Mike Johnson is getting a cold response from fellow Republicans, and a motion to vacate would absolutely fail as Democrats promise to keep their promise. Johnson brought the aid package for Ukraine to the House floor. It passed with flying colors, over 300 yes votes and just over 100 no votes. So as a result, he has Democratic support, or at least enough Democratic support, to overcome a motion to vacate. And let's remember this, Ms. Courtney. The House rules agreed to for the 118th Congress by then Speaker-to-be, Kevin McCarthy, was that a single member of the Republican caucus could file a motion to vacate. Typically, this requires more than 50% of, let's say, Democrats to remove Nancy Pelosi when she was Speaker, which never actually happened. We had a small faction from time to time, 20 or 30 Democrats, who, you know, might have wanted rid of her but didn't have the ability to actually bring the motion to the floor. Not that it would have ever passed anyway. It's my opinion that Nancy Pelosi is likely the savviest politician in Washington, D.C., still serving today. For comments on that $95 billion aid package, we're going to hand it over to Ms. Courtney for comment.
So in that $95 billion aid package mm-hmm. that was for Ukraine, Taiwan, and Israel brought forth by Speaker of the House, TikTok ban was signed into law, and it must be sold to an American corporation or it will be banned in the United States. However, we here at Magnolia Media Podcast highly doubt that it will actually go through with the ban. And I know with China's recent loss of their GDP that they really probably can't afford to not sell to us. John, you agree?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the Chinese economy is in such bad shape that they've shed one-third of their GDP in 4 years. So passing up $175 billion, I've heard numbers as high as $275 billion, and honestly, I think TikTok's worth a hell of a lot more than that, would be very difficult. TikTok's not going anywhere, folks. Let's just quell that. We're just taking the national security risk out of it, so to speak.
Correct. So for those of you who do make your living on TikTok or quite enjoy spending hours on TikTok, you are safe.
Yeah. Money ultimately wins in these situations. And when we're talking about an excess of $200 billion, I don't see really any chance that that's going to happen, especially with basically the complete collapse of the Chinese economy.
So, now, I haven't fact-checked this, but I wouldn't hesitate to say that TikTok's probably the biggest social media platform we've got now.
Oh, yeah, it is. And it actually takes up more attention than all network news combined at any given moment, at any minute that you can pick out of the 24-hour clock, TikTok is getting more ratings, is getting more views than all three, NBC, MSNBC, MSNBC, CNN, and Fox combined, times two.
So that's a really scary kind of
to think about.
I mean, you got to think, if people are getting their news from there, I mean, that's such an easy way to spread misinformation and disinformation. Like, again, we stress this every time, but to our viewers and listeners, please, please, please fact check anything you find on social media. Oh, yes,
absolutely. And make sure that the source is good. We'll provide a list of sources when our website is built that you can typically rely on. Everything from the FT, Financial Times, Forbes, Bloomberg, some legacy media. I tend to stick with ABC and CBS, as NBC has sort of taken a nosedive and all but destroyed their reputation as of late. But Fox News, Newsmax, OANN, all this nonsense, that's right-wing propaganda. It's not news in any way, shape, or form. It's propaganda, again. And when you have no balance at all in your media coverage, and not that now's the time for balance or to try to both sides everything to death. But that leads us to our transition. As we talk a little bit about what's happening in the presidential race, Biden certainly has all of the momentum at the moment, at least nationally. But according to Bloomberg, Biden still trails in 6 out of 7 battleground states. This despite having a pretty big lead, especially when you count in the secondary candidates like RFK, I've lost my mind, Jr., Jill, I live in Moscow, Stein, and Dr. Cornell, my brother West, which I don't know what in the hell is going on with Cornell West other than he needs to pay off some taxes. So he decided to subvert democracy, or at least try to, because he is the most likely candidate to pull votes away from Joe Biden, far more than Jill Stein or RFK Jr. But I'm willing to bet, and I don't know about you, Ms. Courtney, but I'm willing to bet when the next round of Bloomberg polls, state-by-state polls, come out, it'll be the first solid lead Biden has in at least 5 out of 7 of the states. He might be trailing in one, let's say Arizona. But going from a 1 or 2 point deficit to a 1, 2, 3 point lead, that's a 5-6 point swing in the polling. I just don't see it with him polling so well nationally that somehow Biden's going to remain underwater in those key states. Again, like I said, maybe not Arizona yet, maybe even Nevada. He might be kind of on the fence there a little bit. But like I said, with him gaining ground nationally the way that he is, I just don't see how he's going to remain underwater for much longer in those in 6 out of 7 swing states, with Wisconsin being the one state he's already ahead in.
Well, and that's assuming that he is legitimately already behind in those states. Everyone here knows how we feel about polls to begin with. Yes, but in regards to the rest of the polls, how reliable would you say is the Bloomberg poll?
Bloomberg's pretty decent. Again, I agree with Professor Alan Lichtman. And if you're unfamiliar with Professor Alan Lichtman, he's a professor of political science at American University in Washington, D.C. He's 77 years old, and he has correctly predicted the last 9 of the last 10 presidential elections. Now, say this, the one election he got wrong, I believe he got right, and so does he, as Al Gore was technically defeated. He was actually appointed president by the Supreme Court because of ballot tossing. Republicans, not to mention the the Republican candidate for president's brother was governor of the state of Florida at the time, Jeb Bush. If you're old enough to remember, the Secretary of State, I think her name was Catherine Harris, was a very, very fishy character. And it turns out that 1 in 10 ballots from African Americans who broke 95% for Al Gore were thrown out. However, only 1 in 50 ballots from white people who broke about even were thrown out in the state of Florida. So Professor Lichtman says, essentially, I was right in 2000, even though the court got it wrong, and the state was corrupt beyond belief. We've seen corruption on an epic scale in the state of Florida since then. But this was sort of the beginning of the end, if you will, for the state of Florida. However, with the abortion amendment being on the ballot in Florida, I expect they're going to see huge turnout in Florida this time around. What do you think?
Oh, 100%. I think you're going to have all the women out to vote, and hopefully that turns Florida back around. I think we've got a shot at least to close that gap and make it a lot closer than...
We need that Senate seat.
Yeah, we need the Senate seat for sure. As far as the presidential election, if we win enough other states, we could do without Florida, but it wouldn't surprise me if it gets pretty close to being... Mm-hmm. And I know that the biggest issues that Biden's has kind of working against him right now are going to be Gaza, TikTok, and of course, everyone is still on about his age for some reason. And you actually mentioned Jill Stein earlier, and there was a, she was interviewing at one of the colleges this morning or late afternoon. It was on the news this morning, saying how that the colleges are, kind of attacking the First Amendment, making these students not arresting, but detaining the students that are actively protesting and closing campuses. She was saying that they were attacking their First Amendment rights and that they're kind of protecting the war contractors instead of, you know, American citizens.
Now, I've got a few things to say about Jill Stein. Jill Stein, first of all, go back to Moscow and just shut the up. We're not interested in you. You're the dark horse candidate who caused Donald Trump to happen. Hillary Clinton would have won that election if it hadn't been for the 2 or 3% of the vote you took from her. Green Party these days doesn't mean you're from the Sierra Club or some major environmental group. A Green Party candidate at this point is essentially Moscow's favorite candidate because you're going to draw votes away from a Democrat who, by the way, this Democratic president made the largest investment in green energy in the history of the United States with the passage of the infrastructure law. So I don't have anything good to say about Jill Stein. And as far as these college campus protests are concerned, I believe, and so do the presidents of these universities. We're talking primarily about NYU and Columbia. What's happening at Columbia, a lot of that's being hijacked by white nationalists who are just trying to blend in with the students.
That was what a lot of the colleges brought up, that organized protesters were starting to kind of infiltrate with the with the students and kind of encourage that. And I know a lot of the Jewish students were saying they don't feel safe on campus, and the campuses were dealing with a lot of vandalism.
I actually saw, and this has been reported widely, I actually saw a sign one of the campus protesters was holding up, and it had a finger pointing, and on the front of the placard it said, "Hamas is coming for you next." Hamas is a terrorist organization that's using its own people as human shields instead of meeting the IDF, the Israeli Defense Forces, on the field of battle. They're hiding in places that force Israel to bomb civilians. This is and to hold up a sign like that and point it at an American Jew, or having, and this is another important factor, if you listen to the Pivot podcast or any of the podcasts from Prof. G. Media, Professor Galloway, he'll talk about it. If a professor wants to go out and practice his or her First Amendment right to protest, that's fine. To free speech, rather. But if you start holding up placards and signs or chanting from the river to the sea, which means the genocide of all Jewish people and the erasure of the Jewish state, you're fired. Fired. No negotiation. Fired. When you return to your classroom, there should be another professor already there. At least that's my opinion. How about you?
Oh, 100%. They shouldn't be allowed to kind of encourage the hate speech. And that's what a lot of the colleges are basing their decisions on, is the hate speech and the safety of their students. And my issue with it is that you have people making these anti-Semite comments and just being all around jerks, and yet they're out there with their faces covered, wearing masks, wearing glasses. If you're gonna say something like that, have the balls to stand up and say it. And I mean that for any protester. If you're gonna believe in something like that, have the balls to stand up and be like, you know what? Yeah, that's me.
Yeah. You know, I went to a protest at the Baker Center of the University of Tennessee over Marsha Blackburn, who is, we have a chance to throw out of the United States Senate, by the way, and elect Gloria Johnson. So if you live in the state of Tennessee, vote Gloria, 100%. But we didn't even think of wearing masks. But of course, we weren't there, you know, talking about the eradication of a minority. It's obscene, it's absurd. And I think it's something that many of these protesters, these bright young people, because you have to be bright, let's face it, to be at Columbia, to be at NYU, you have to be bright. And I think they're going to live to regret protesting on behalf of Hamas. And that's what a lot of these protests have devolved into. They've devolved into essentially protesting on behalf of Hamas. And against Israel. Israel has a right to exist. So do the Palestinian people. You can be a critic, as I am, of the IDF's tactics and the Gaza-Israeli conflict. And of course, no one wants to see Bibi Netanyahu thrown out of office as badly as I do. Maybe President Biden does, who's been nothing but supportive of Bibi Netanyahu. However, Bibi Netanyahu stuck a knife in his back more than once. But it doesn't make me an anti-Semite. I'm not going to go out and protest on behalf of a terrorist organization backed by Iran. And I love the comment that keeps coming up from those of those of us on the what I would call the pragmatic left. Let's have some of these students, especially the female students, live one day in a nation run by Iran, Hezbollah, Hamas, or their proxies in Yemen.
Oh God, if they survived, right? You can't tell me that wouldn't turn around like ridiculous.
They'd be out of there in a heartbeat.
That is scary, to think about. I would never set foot, especially right now, in one of those places.
Mm-hmm. And that's ultimately what we're talking about. We have a free democratic society in Israel, who is absolutely America's most important ally in the region. Whether you want to tie some religious belief to it or not, it doesn't make any difference to me. It is what it is. So we have a civilized group. We also have the Palestinians who are suffering mightily because of what Hamas did. The Palestinian people didn't attack on October 7th. Hamas did. They took 100 or 200 whatever hostages, back to Gaza with them. The Israeli government has not done enough to secure the release of those hostages. And then they went about for 6 hours murdering and raping Jewish people. And we have to stop the settlements. We know that there have been many indiscretions committed by this far right-wing Israeli government. But it's gotten more right-wing because Hamas took power in 05, 06. And it's just been, they just keep escalating things. They're escalating the situation using the rhetoric that they use. And this whole river to the sea concept that they're somehow going to one day wipe out the Israeli state and the Jewish people. It's absurd. And I do believe a lot of these students will live to regret what they're doing. It's one thing to say, to go out and protest for a ceasefire. It's another thing entirely to hold up a sign from Hamas, you know, saying that, you know, Hamas is going to get you next, and pointing it toward Jewish students. I mean, that's beyond obscene.
Yeah, I think you're right that a lot of these students are going to grow up and come to regret their decisions. But let's go ahead and turn it around real quick to the Trump trials. My heart almost goes out to him. I mean, he is sitting there with nobody. We've come to realize there's no Melania, no Ivanka, no Barron. I mean, he's alone.
Yeah, he has sat in that courtroom now for 2 weeks completely by himself. Other than Todd Blanche, his attorney, who's had to suffer through the stench of sitting next to Donald Trump. And again, that's not just us. It was initially reported by Midas Touch, but since then it's been reported by basically everyone in the press pool who has been allowed in the courtroom or in the antechamber adjacent to the courtroom, that there's the gag reflex sort of kicks in when you get too close to old Dementia J. And the fact he's used Melania as a scapegoat, saying that he couldn't spend time with Melania because he had to be in court.
Even though I think was it a funeral that they were at? There was something they were at where he tried to get in the car, and she pretty much told him to go screw himself.
I mean, you could see, and she's you know, refused to hold hands with him. I mean, these are things in public that we've all seen. We know Melania Trump despises her husband, but in whatever sort of swap they made to get the Lithuanian over here to marry him, I'm assuming she's stuck in that contractual situation. We know about Karen McDougal. Karen McDougal, in fact, when being interviewed by NPR, I think it was about a year ago, talked about her 10-month relationship with Donald. They would see each other at least 5 times a month. All of this while he was married to Melania. So when he makes the argument that we hid those payments to Stormy, because I didn't want to hurt my family. That's the argument Trump's making. What? Really expect us to believe that?
I feel the same way about that as I do as my ex-adopted father. You brought it on yourself. Oh, like, absolutely. Everybody abandoned you because you are just a piece of shit.
That's what it comes down to. When you're that big an asshole and you're carrying on an affair because your wife's pregnant with your 16th child or whatever, that we know that you weren't worried about Melania finding out about this. And in fact, on the stand, David Pecker, head of AMI, which owns the National Enquirer, talked about and was asked by prosecutors, is there any truth to the concept that Donald Trump wanted to catch and kill these articles about himself and Karen McDougal for Melania's sake? And David Pecker found that almost laughable. And then this is Trump's friend. So now Trump had to listen to opening statements. He's been excoriated by the judge. So has his attorney, who's been told that he is losing all credibility with the court, which judges have a considerable amount of power in a courtroom, even when there's a jury that's ultimately going to decide guilt or innocence or a mistrial. And losing all credibility with the judge, well, that's not a position Todd Blanche wants to be in. But knowing what a narcissistic maniac and asshole he is, to think that Donald Trump has had to sit there and listen to the prosecution take him apart, the defense attempt to defend him, to a friend, a man who said he considered himself a friend of Donald Trump's to going back more than 20 years, and David Pecker, who took the stand and despite saying he's Donald Trump's friend, answered pointed questions and said no, he didn't care one way or the other whether or not Melania found out. It seems to me there might be more truth in the idea he didn't want Karen McDougal to find out about Stormy Daniels, because Karen McDougal ended their 10 or 11th month relationship when the Stormy Daniels situation popped up. I don't know what Karen McDougal could have possibly been thinking, but she did get $145,000 in a catch-and-kill scheme with the National Enquirer.
I kind of feel like that Karen McDougal thing was a sugar daddy kind of situation there almost.
I don't know. It's hard to say.
I don't know. I feel like Trump doesn't have anything to offer except to pay somebody. I mean, he had to pay a porn star to have sex with him.
And like Mitt Romney said, I don't know of anyone paying $130,000 for someone to not have sex with them.
And again, that's nothing against porn stars. We have no issue with your choice of,
care what you do for a living.
It doesn't bother us. However, just anybody to pay somebody like that to have sex with you, just, I don't know, it's that much money for that is just beyond me. Like, are you that repulsive that you can't find anybody?
130 large for to sleep with a 40 something. What was she, 40 already?
Yeah.
I think she was over 40. So a worn out porn star, you know, who has gone on, you know, making fun of Donald Trump's junk tour, basically since.
I will say she did make out like a bandit with all this.
She has. Good for Stephanie or Stormy, whichever. Stephanie Clifford, of course, is her real name. But good for Stormy. You know, I mean, she had to. She made $135,000. She has gone on, I guess, like a striptease tour, you know, and gotten all the MAGA hats out. And what's really crazy, Colin Jost made this joke last night, that the man who took abortion away from you, Donald Trump, is a known New York playboy, a man who has probably paid for more than one abortion in his life. Sorry, evangelicals, it's just a fact. However, an 80-year-old Catholic is the one trying to ensure you have a right to family planning and abortion.
That's like the perfect sense anymore. No, and that's like the perfect example of a secular democracy. I mean, he's Catholic, for God's sake. Mm-hmm. There's not a chance in hell he believes in abortion, like personally. But I mean, he's out there fighting for the rest of us. You know, it's not his decision, and he knows that.
He's just making the argument for bodily autonomy and for more rights, not less. We might, you know, if things don't turn around quickly and we don't do something about this damned Supreme Court, I mean, I don't know what the hell is going on with this bunch of crackpot attorneys turned, you know, lifelong appointees to a court that has no ethics committee, it's almost impossible to remove one of these bandits. It takes a 2/3 majority in the U.S. Senate. You have to impeach them just like a president. So that leaves a Democratic majority in the Senate and a Democratic president, but with one choice, and that's to expand the court and pass some sort of legislation along with it that stops any further expansion or reduction in the number of justices on the court for, let's say, 50 years. Republicans can't pass anything. So it'll be very unlikely that we would see a situation where they could actually pass multiple pieces of legislation to roll back that law. As in 4 years, in 2 years of complete control of government, they were only able to pass one bill under Donald Trump, which added $2.3 trillion per year from 2017 to 2025. So $2.7 trillion added to the deficit per year because of a tax cut that only benefited the wealthiest people in the country. That's all Donald Trump did, other than appoint three justices to the Supreme Court who lied to the Senate, said that Roe was settled law, Casey reaffirmed it, and then the first chance they get, Samuel Alito draws up the opinion that does away with Roe v. Wade and sends women's health care into the toilet.
Now, speaking of assholes and lying and whatnot, I believe we have a new story breaking in New York for, is it Cuomo?
Yeah. So here's the situation. We're going to start on Sundays when first of all, a little housekeeping. We want to apologize for yesterday's episode, the one that was available. Was it yesterday morning's episode?
I believe so. Yeah. Yes, and all previous episodes
and of the season previous two. Episodes in season two where we uploaded the file without doing the proper editorial work, and you had that dead air time. I think yesterday's episode was an hour of dead air time essentially. We apologize for that. We're going to get that cleaned up. It's just a mistake on our part. Of course, we're working on our audio. We're constantly trying to improve the podcast. By the way, while I'm taking care of some housekeeping, if you support the podcast, if you like the work we're doing, if you like having a journalistic outlet and a podcast from a place like Knoxville, Tennessee, from the eye of the right-wing storm, if you will, a group who's left of center or liberal, progressive, whatever you want to call us. If you're enjoying what we do, please check us out on patreon.com/Magnolia Media Network. And be sure to follow and subscribe the Magnolia Media Pod wherever you get your fine podcasts. But anyway, back to your point. Andrew Cuomo, former governor of New York, the man who left the default maps in place that made it possible for 6 congressional districts in the state of New York to go Republican. Essentially, the only reason we don't have all Democratic government from the House to the White House, the only reason we don't have complete Democratic control is because of this asshole, Andrew Cuomo. Now, Andrew Cuomo was caught up in a sexual harassment scandal that ultimately cost him his governorship. Now he's been subpoenaed in a lawsuit over his conduct around COVID-19 and what amounts to lies about the death toll. He also allowed patients who had tested positive for COVID-19 and were senior citizens who lived in senior living facilities to go back in to senior living facilities while they were still positive for COVID-19, likely worsening the death toll. I don't know what to say about that. Andrew Cuomo was already on my quote shit list, if you will, but gold medal for asshole of the week has to go to Andrew Cuomo. Number one, you sabotaged the U.S. House of Representatives. You sabotaged your own party by allowing these maps to even exist. Number two, now it appears that you lied about death tolls, that you put sick elderly people back into elder care facilities where it was you're essentially wiping out an entire nursing home, essentially wiping them out. That's a big I don't give a shit from Andrew Cuomo. Then you're hit with sexual harassment allegations. Sexual harassment allegations that were so strong, you gave up being governor of perhaps the second most important state in the union behind California, New York. So whether or not the allegations were true, I have to lean to whether they're probably true. They were terribly specific, if you remember at the time, when he had to step down. But, silver medal for biggest asshole of the week. We're going to keep it in the family and go with Chris Cuomo. Once a primetime star on CNN, now works for his own little media company called News Nation, who's suing CNN. Now, CNN paid him between $15 and $30 million a year, Miss Courtney. Then he does something like undermine his own credibility by offering media strategy to his brother while the sexual harassment allegations were swirling around. And he got himself fired because you can't be the star of CNN and at the same time be aiding and abetting a subject. Someone that you might have to cover, even if he is your brother. At some point, you just have to say, I can't, there's nothing I can do for you, bro. I mean, you're going to cost me $30 million a year.
And he did.
That's exactly right. Now, the CNN, in one of the only moves CNN has made in the last few years that actually made some sense, was firing Chris Cuomo. He had it coming. He'd been kind of an asshole for a long time. Let's just face it. I mean, Jake Tapper is an example he's bringing up, saying that Jake Tapper had done bad things and that CNN had been okay with that. That Jeffrey Toobin, at his other job at the New Yorker, was caught on a Zoom call during the pandemic masturbating, but was eventually allowed to come back on the airwaves on CNN. Jeffrey Toobin's an attorney. He probably gets paid as a contributor. He has multiple jobs. This didn't happen while he was on the clock for CNN, so to speak. This happened, again, during a Zoom call with some co-workers from the New Yorker, and I guess he just couldn't wait. He's got one computer set up for his Zoom call. He thought he had muted the call, and he was watching porn on another computer and masturbating at the same time. I can't believe Jeffrey Toobin ever showed his face on television again, because we're talking about a 60-year-old man that has plenty of money, but here we are.
God, I'd be so embarrassed. Like, that's just awful. Like, I even make sure I'm one of those people wearing proper pants when I'm on Zoom.
Yeah.
Like, the things these people have come across since the kind of growth of video conferencing, it's appalling.
And it's not like Jeffrey Toobin was some salacious figure. He was he's a highly educated attorney, a solid news correspondent in the time when I used to watch CNN. He was a solid news correspondent. So when the news, I had to make sure I was thinking of the right person. Jeffrey Toobin was masturbating on a Zoom call. And by the way, there were women on that Zoom call.
I don't care if there were women or just men on that. That's not something I want to see anybody.
In general. Yeah, it's an awful situation. But quickly, what we talk about, we were talking about the polls a moment ago. And we were talking about Florida. We were talking about Texas. The Republicans in Texas are terrified. especially of mail-in voting, which went to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, yeah, you can do away with mail-in voting. There's some technicalities there, but they essentially banned mail-in voting because of a Senate candidate named Colin Allred. If you don't know Colin Allred, I'm sure there's a ColinAllred.com out there. Go and give a couple of bucks to his campaign, because we can get rid of Ted Cruz, and we have to pick up at least one red state Senate seat, whether that be in Florida or in Texas. We hold on to the seats that we have. We're going to have to rely on split-ticket voting in Montana, which John Tester has done before, and I believe he can do it again. And I believe that Sherrod Brown in Ohio is going to do the same thing. I think Arizona's a safe seat. I think ultimately Nevada, that Senate seat, is going to be fine. Senator Casey, Bob Casey in Pennsylvania, I mean, come on. He's up by 8 to 10 points. I think that's a state that, you know, is going to be a down ballot race, and I believe Biden's going to win Pennsylvania. If we could pick off a Senate seat in Florida or Texas, it almost assures Democrats control of the United States Senate. And with Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema gone, that means expansion of the court. That means another infrastructure bill, likely the same or bigger than the first infrastructure bill. It means a complete restoration of women's health care in this country, making Roe v. Wade essentially the law of the land, and defanging this activist, right-wing, pro-fascist, religious Supreme Court. That is so fundamentally important to the future of our democracy, to expand the court to 13 or 15 or even 21 seats that would all be appointed by what is a pragmatic Democrat and President Biden. That's why so many Republicans felt comfortable voting for him. By the way, 16% of Pennsylvania Republicans in a closed primary voted for, drum roll please, Nikki Haley. Over 150,000 votes for Nikki Haley. That's a bad sign for Donald Trump in Pennsylvania, when people are in a closed primary or literally voting for anyone else, even though no one else is left in the Republican primary race for the Republican nomination for president. It's a foregone conclusion. We know who it's going to be. It's going to be Donald Trump. But when you have a state like Pennsylvania that you have to win, and 17% of 16% of your own party is voting for someone as essentially a protest vote. And by the way, Democrats don't usually turn out in the same numbers as Republicans for primaries. But just to give you, just to foreshadow what's going on in Pennsylvania just a little bit, Biden got 906,000 votes in a primary in the state of Pennsylvania. It's a heavily populated state, fine. Donald Trump got less than 700,000. Fewer than 700,000 in a primary. And then again, typically Republicans are better about turning out in primary. Now, he may have approached that 900,000 votes if almost 20% of his party just refused to vote for him and voted for Nikki Haley. Reports are that 220,000 registered Republicans voted for President Biden in the 2020 election. And we sort of see evidence of that happening again. Also, one more point. North Carolina, the Biden administration putting real pressure on North Carolina Republicans. And as a Tennessean who lives very, very close to the North Carolina border, especially cities like Asheville, which are very liberal, I mean hippie liberal, sort of hippie bastion, so to speak, in Asheville, North Carolina. And then you have the research triangle in the center of the state between Wake Forest, Duke, University of North Carolina, North Carolina State. You've got more and more liberals pushing that way. In 2008, during the presidential election, it did flip for President Obama. Now, President Obama is a generational talent. And of course, Joe Biden has a record on which to already run. This was in 2008 before Obama had served at all. North Carolina has been sort of shaking free of its rightward tilt over the past few years. It's come within a point or two of going Democrat. I believe that they have the votes in North Carolina to win it. And obviously, the internal polling and the Biden campaign, which so far is running a masterful campaign, I think they see it too. They see something, or they wouldn't be spending tens of millions of dollars in a state like North Carolina. What about you? What do you think, Ms. Courtney?
Oh, I agree. I think that they're inching towards flipping. Even when I lived there, I lived in High Point, so Greensboro area. And even in that area, it was a lower income, higher African-American population area that I was in. And they were pretty liberal. So
yeah.
It was growing even when I was there.
What you're going to get, you know, unlike a lot of southern states, like let's say South Carolina, for example, almost all of the Democratic vote comes from the black community. In North Carolina, however, you've seen a huge, huge surge of highly educated white people who have moved again to what we refer to as the research triangle, the triangle made by Wake Forest, Duke, UNC, and North Carolina State. Really, really impressive universities. You have big cities like Charlotte, which is a banking hub. So a lot of highly educated bankers and financiers who've moved to the state of North Carolina over the last 20 years or so, pre-2008, you know, financial collapse. So with, like you said, Greensboro, with cities like Wilmington, cities like Charlotte, cities like Asheville, cities like Raleigh and Durham, I believe North Carolina will be a one-point state one way or the other, whether Biden ends up pulling it out or not. You know, and if he doesn't win Georgia this time, which he doesn't need to win Georgia in order to win re-election, he, you know, North Carolina is right there, and I believe North Carolina is trending toward Virginia instead of trending toward South Carolina, which means it's trending liberal the way Virginia is, and instead of conservative the way South Carolina is, at least at the moment. Any last thoughts before we wrap things up, Ms. Courtney?
That pretty much wraps it up for me. Once again, any questions, comments, concerns, shoot us an email, magnoliamedia2024@gmail.com. Follow us on all of the places you get your podcast, and definitely help us out on Patreon if you are able to. We are a small little company trying to get up and grow, so if you like what we do, give us a hand.
Yeah, again, at patreon.com/Magnolia Media Network.
Yes.
Right? Okay, we got it right. We'll make sure I get everything right here. And please follow, like, subscribe, leave comments wherever you get your podcasts by searching the Magnolia Media Pod. This is your host, Jonathan M. Ruggiero, signing off. Until next time, be well.